Hey everyone, this is Adam Ellenboss from Nightlight Astrology, and today we are going to take some time out to begin reflecting on Venus's upcoming retrograde in the sign of Leo. Venus is now in the sign of Leo and is going to be there for quite some time, the rest of the summer. Toward the late part of July, Venus will turn retrograde and will then move retrograde through the sign of Leo all the way until early September. So we're going to take a look at this upcoming Venus retrograde cycle, and we're going to prepare for it today on a spiritual and psychological level. We'll do lots of other things too. As we get closer to Venus's retrograde, we'll do horoscopes. As we get closer to Venus's retrograde, we'll do an archetypal exploration, and we'll talk about Venus retrograde cycles and previous Venus retrograde cycles in Leo and all of that good stuff. But today, as Venus is already in the sign of Leo, I've been meditating on this placement. It's the one that I was born with natally. Venus, my natal Venus, is in Leo. And I've been thinking a lot about this as well, because the planet, transiting planet Uranus, has been squaring my natal Venus. And I can just say that because it's my ascendant ruler and Venus in Leo is so personal to me, I've had the opportunity to meditate really deeply on that archetypal combination of Venus in the sign of the lion, Venus in the sign of the sun. So I've brought some thoughts today that I hope will help all of us to begin preparing for what is surely to be a pretty epic Venus retrograde later this summer, one that's work is already beginning in our hearts since Venus entered Leo recently and hit immediate opposition to Pluto last week. So that's our agenda for today. We're going to talk about the heart as a renewable resource and this Venus retrograde as an opportunity for us to tap into the renewable resource that is the heart, and how we can do that, and why Venus in Leo is a good opportunity to do that. So that is our agenda for today. As always, don't forget to like and subscribe. It helps the channel to grow, and share your comments in the comments section, because when you do that, the algorithm likes it. It also creates great community space for us to share in our own insights. If you'd like, you can find a transcript of today's talk on my website, which is nightlightastrology.com. And as always, if you have a story to share, use the hashtag grabbed, tell us the transit, and tell us your story. We aggregate those and occasionally do storytelling episodes. All right, well, let's take a look at Venus's journey through the sign of Leo for starters, and talk about this from the standpoint of the cycle's length and the details of the cycle. So we're going to move this. I'm going to move this backward just a little bit more so we can see. Here it is. So this is the entrance of Venus into Leo, which was June 5th. So we've had Venus entering Leo just recently, and as it did so, it immediately hit an opposition to Pluto, and then we worked through the square to Jupiter. So some really big aspects that Venus made in the sign of Leo pretty immediately. Right now, Venus is also co-present with Mars in the sign of Leo, and that'll change a little bit later. But let's take this forward. You can see that Venus is working its way through Leo, and one of the biggest transits that we have early in the month of July is the square between Venus in Leo and Uranus in Taurus. That's happening on July 2nd. That's a pretty exciting transit that will replay itself through the retrograde as well. We'll be talking about that one in depth. Venus then looks like it's going to conjoin Mars, but then what happens is Venus starts slowing down considerably, gets up to about the 28th degree, stations around July 23rd and into the 24th, turns retrograde. From that point forward, Venus's retrograde takes it backward and through the square to Uranus, which happens around August. Looks like it's about August 9th, maybe the 8th a little bit. And then Venus is going to go through the heart of the sun around August 13th. And then as Venus is starting to rise into the morning star position and gaining that distance from the sun, Venus will slow down and station around September 4th, turning direct right around September 4th into the 5th. And then from that point, Venus is going to go forward again. It backward went through the square to Jupiter as well in August. And then it comes back through that square to Jupiter around September 17th. And then it's going to make the square to Uranus again, right around September 29th, and then it finally leaves the sign of Leo and enters Virgo right around October 9th. So we have effectively from June to October, we have Venus in the sign of Leo. So there's a lot of big long opportunity for us to reflect on the archetypal meaning of Venus in Leo. And although, like I said, we're going to take this on in a variety of different ways between now and, say, Venus turning retrograde. We'll do horoscopes. We'll take a few looks at the archetypal combination of Venus and Jupiter, Venus and Uranus, and so on. And we'll take, you know, we'll obviously take a look at previous retrogrades, because we have had some previous retrogrades to look back at with Venus and Leo. So we will do all of that. Today, what I'd like to do is I want to talk about Venus in Leo and sort of preparing ourselves for this big, long retrograde period, or just even more broadly speaking, the long period of Venus in Leo from, you know, June to October. And I want to talk about 10 ways in which the heart is a renewable resource. And I say that because when Venus is in the sign of the sun, so much of what Venus is connecting to is the symbolism of the heart. The heart can be something that connects us in love, in romance, in friendship, in the things that we're attracted to, in art, all of which have immediate connection to Venus and to the heart, which is ruled by Leo, is a physical organ, but also is associated with the sun. So there's just a heart and soul kind of vibe to Venus in Leo. There's a connection between what we love and the organ of the heart. So I want to, I'm going to share a few things with you guys before I get into my list today. We're going to talk about 10 ways that the heart is a renewable resource and what that even means. First, I want to read you something that I wrote. This is from my book, Fishers of Men, The Gospel of an Ayahuasca Vision Quest, which I wrote, which was published in 2010. And there is a section of this book that came, I literally wrote it on a notebook. And I wrote it on a notebook right after I finished an ayahuasca ceremony. So it was pretty incredible. So let me try to qualify that a little bit more. So for those of you who don't know what ayahuasca is, this is something that I worked with for about 10 years of my life, pretty regularly, and really was what formed my interest in astrology, yoga, spirituality, that helped me do a lot of healing from the physical form of addiction to the mental, psychological, and ancestral demons connected to addiction in my family. It's a very powerful psychedelic plant medicine that shamans in South Central America have used for quite some time, ceremonially, medicinally. And of course, it is not something that works for everyone, nor is it something that is appropriate for everyone. And I'm not going to get into that, because there's a whole, as things become popular, you know, there can be a whole dark side to things as they become more popular. And there is that side of the ayahuasca world as well. But for me, during these years, ayahuasca had an enormously positive and helpful impact on my life, healing. So I wrote a book about my, you know, this was, and I wrote this in my late 20s, this book that came out in 2010 through Tartar Penguin. Anyway, at the end of one of the ceremonies, I just sat with a notebook in candlelight and I wrote this. And these were, I said, if I had to make a list of my faith statements, if I had no other door to nail them to but the door of my own heart, and I was referring to the Protestant Reformation, no other place to write them down but my own private journal, I would say, when we believe in our heart, we express ourselves from a place of unconditional acceptance. Unconditional acceptance will make every hell into heaven. This message of salvation is always meant for the here and now. Belief in the heart does not make life eternal. It makes eternal life heavenly. The more we contemplate the physical organ of the heart, the easier it is to understand what believe in your heart actually means. The human heart beats itself. We don't know what makes a heart beat other than the fact that it beats itself. We don't know why it starts beating or when it will stop. The fact is that no matter what we do, good or bad, responsible or irresponsible, our heart nourishes us by continuing to beat itself. It is always sustaining us. Therefore, the heart does not have a concept of judgment. It flows with whatever we choose and continues to support us. All human darkness comes from feeling judged, even though we are never judged. The sun is the heart of our solar system. No matter what happens on planet Earth, the sun continues to shine upon us, rising and setting. At night, the moon waxes and wanes. The moon's light is a reflection of the sun's light. No matter what happens, the sustaining rhythm of the heart is present. The heart cannot pass judgment because its nature is its rhythm. That's all the heart does. It lives and beats. Believing in your heart means that you are your heart. Your heart is part of the one heart. Believing in your heart is not something you do because you feel you are wrong or bad or lost. You are never lost because you have always been here and experiencing every step of your journey. There's nothing to accomplish for the sake of the heart. The heart is all there is. Behind every moment you think you are not peaceful or feel dissatisfied, the ability you have to feel that way in the first place is always enabled by your heart. You can learn to see this when you feel afraid or find yourself in any type of place you don't want to be. Connect to your heart. When Jesus talked about believing in your heart, I don't think he was talking about belief in something. Jesus was not talking about believing really hard that a mountain would drop into the sea or believing really hard that he died for your sins. Anybody who stared hard enough at a cup and tried to believe it into floating has realized that this kind of believing doesn't work. Instead, I think Jesus proclaimed that the larger our belief in the heart becomes, the more we extend our sense of who we are into the larger heart of reality, which is God. A miracle is a perception a person has while awakening to their own heart. Like many other miracles, miracle workers, Jesus always emphasized that miracles are meaningless because they extend from the exact same heart that sustains everything, whether it is a miracle, whether it is perceived as a miracle or not. Miracles happen all the time when you believe in your heart, because the heart is the miracle. So I look at this now and I'm like, well, it's kind of corny. I don't know. I mean, those are deeply valuable statements to me because I look back on them and I see my 26-year-old, 27-year-old self having gone through a harrowing experience, you know, maybe vomiting and screaming that night. I don't remember exactly the details of that particular ceremony. There were so many of them. But what I do know is I remember sitting there and writing those statements. It was the single, at that time, it was the single biggest breakthrough I ever had when it came to what faith is all about and what belief in the heart, what does your heart believe to be true, really means. It was a moment where I remember thinking to myself, my physical heart is a metaphor for who I am and for what God is. It is this unconditional pulse of life that accepts the, allows for the premise of absolutely anything and everything by the virtue of its 100% accepting, supporting, life-affirming rhythm. And it's by its very being, it beats, it is alive, and it says yes because of it. Now, I know that a lot of that may sound sort of grandiose, you know, on a Wednesday or whatever, we're just sitting here, you know, trying to have a day. And now we're talking about universal hearts and all this kind of stuff. It's like, well, where does that place us? There's a passage from one of my favorite books called The Thought of the Heart and the Soul of the World by James Hillman. He says a bunch of things about the heart in this book that are amazing. But he says this: when we fall in love, we begin to imagine. And when we begin to imagine, we fall in love. To this day, depth psychology is caught by the necessary connection of love and imagination, which it has not yet had the philosophy to place. When we fall in love, we begin to imagine, and when we begin to imagine, we fall in love. To this day, depth psychology is caught by the necessary connection of love and imagination, which it has not yet had the philosophy to place. What I hear Hillman saying here is that the heart gives us the ability to imagine. And when we imagine, we fall in love, which is to say we begin to feel the burning pleasure of the heart, which is not the same as an ordinary mundane pleasure. It's a soul pleasure. It's a life-affirming pleasure. It's a kind of accepting, rhythmic, bloody, beating yes that gives rise to an existential sense of rightness or it's a joy, it's a pleasure, but it's one that it's more like a hallelujah than it is a, you know, the satisfaction you get from eating a really tasty burger or something. Although that's pretty good too. When we fall in love, we begin to imagine. And when we begin to imagine, we fall in love. That the heart facilitates living a life, living stories. And that those stories all help us tap into the heart. And that the heart helps us to continue telling stories. That's another way of reading what Hillman is saying here when he tells us that when we begin to imagine, we fall in love. And when we fall in love, we begin to imagine. One of the reasons that I wanted to talk about this today is that I believe very firmly that when Venus is in Leo, and a long stay in Leo with a deep, long retrograde with some very powerful aspects throughout, that we are going to be just deep into the love stories of our life, those that burn in the heart. And the burning is life-giving and life-affirming, and it is the kind of burning that will make a soul more soulful. But we have to be prepared for the way that the heart likes to create stories, the way that the heart likes to imagine a life, and the way that imagining helps us tap into a different kind of love, a different kind of joy, or a different kind of pleasure, an existential, heart-throbbing, bloody pleasure. It's different. And it can be very theatrical and sort of dramatic. So, on that note, here are 10 ways that the heart is a renewable resource. And if we tap into these things while Venus is in Leo, especially during the retrograde, I think that not only will we survive whatever the retrograde dishes up, whatever heartbreaking, heart-making stories start to unfold, but we will thrive. We will actually find that our life is deeper, richer, more meaningful. We won't just survive, but we'll thrive. So number one, the heart accepts what we say and believe about it. Because the heart's nature is accepting, 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 just as rhythmic as the physical beating of your heart. It says yes, it says yes, it affirms, it is life, including all of it. That if you start saying to yourself, my heart is good, my heart is strong, my heart is capable, my heart is forgiving, my heart is beautiful, my heart is connected to other people, or if you say, my heart is broken, my heart is torn apart, my heart is wounded, that the heart will just say, yes, 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 yes. That doesn't mean that there's anything inherently wrong with saying one thing versus the other or believing one thing versus the other about your heart. I mean, isn't it amazing that the heart doesn't judge and the heart just says, yes, 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 yes. But that can help us too if we reflect on that. Then we can feed our hearts the stories that we want to live with regard to the nature of the heart itself. My heart is strong. My heart is capable, right? My heart can recover. My heart can learn. My heart can grow. My heart is forgiving. My heart is wise. The heart, in the meantime, just says, yes, 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 yes. Listen this summer to the story that you are telling yourself about your heart. If you want to call it your soul, heart and soul, they go together in a lot of, in the way that we talk about the heart, we often talk about the soul. I don't think it's super important to get out some kind of psychological scalpel and be super finicky and picky about the way we differentiate these things. Sometimes I guess it is, but not all the time. If you say the heart is like the soul, the heart just goes, yes, yes, yes. So the heart accepts what we say and believe about it. And that's a really beautiful thing that can come in during a long period of Venus in Leo. We can say, I accept myself because my heart is beautiful, and the heart will affirm that. Number two is that the heart grows stronger when we tear off small pieces of it and leave them in special places and people. Sometimes there's a lot, and don't get me wrong, I'm no problem with this idea, but there is an idea out there that our soul gets fragmented into all these different pieces. And then you have to pay a shaman, right? to go fly around like an eagle in the ether spaces and collect them and bring them back. The fragmented pieces have to come back together. And I actually believe that's true. So I don't mean to ridicule that. But there's something else that's also true. It's not that there's only one true paradigm and it's like, well, souls are like, you know, I don't know, they're like glass. And if they break, then you have to go collect the pieces and then somehow glue them back together or something. There are many different paradigms. Remember, what we tell our heart about its nature is the heart will simply affirm that. So if we have experienced fragmentation and we have an experience of fragmentation and collecting those pieces and putting them back together, the heart just goes, yes, yes, yes. But there's a different way of thinking about the heart too, which is that the heart is an infinitely renewable resource that you can peel a huge piece of your heart off and you can leave it in Havana, Cuba. I was listening to a song and I don't remember who did it, but I think the name of the song was Havana. It came on like my suggested song list on Pandora or something. And I was like, ooh, I really like this song. And I think there was a line, something about, I left my heart in Havana. You leave a piece of your heart in Havana. You leave some of it in India. You leave it in the girlfriend or boyfriend you had when you were 22. You leave it in your high school best friend in the road trip you took. You tear off pieces of your part. You tear off parts of your heart. You tear off pieces of it and you place them in things and people and experiences. And the heart gets stronger when we do that, when we literally tear off a little piece and give it to someone or something, place it somewhere. Because what happens is rather than there being like a finite amount of heart that is reduced and then scattered and has to be all collected in some kind of finite manner, there's also a sense in which the heart is infinite. And if you tear off a piece, it grows a new one. That you can't actually reduce the size or amount of heart by tearing a piece off and leaving it in people and places. There's also a truth about the heart, which is that when you tear it off, it's just like tearing a little piece of medicine off from a plant that will continue to grow new leaves and sprout new flowers and so forth. So you can harvest little pieces of the plant and it doesn't threaten the integrity of the life of the plant. It just keeps growing. So that's also true about our hearts. And one of the things we can do during this Venus retrograde is to be intentional and deliberate, almost ceremonial, and say, how do I get more conscious about giving pieces of my heart to things and people and moments? The way that I do something, the way that I cook a meal, I can tear off a little piece of my heart, like it's a little bit of parsley or something you're putting on a dish. So believe that it is, not only is it okay, but it's good for your heart to find meaningful, deliberate ways of tearing off small pieces of it and planting them in people and environments and actions and so forth. That your heart will grow stronger. And not only that, but then it's like your heart starts developing an ecosystem. My heart lives in many places, in many images, in many people, in many experiences, in many memories. My heart is not just a singular thing that is either intact or out of tact, but it's a living organism that shoots off like the way that trees drop to spread and proliferate their seeds. Number three, the heart grows stronger when we say yes to our experiences. Remember, I'm just giving that image of the heart from my ceremony and to seeing it being like, yes, yes, yes. I think it is the hardest but most artistic and courageous thing that we can do, and it doesn't always happen in the moment, it can happen later in reflection, but to say yes to all of our experiences. Doesn't matter, you don't have to say yes to your experience in the actual moment of the experience, though that does help, but you can say yes too in reflection. That was a hard day, but as I sit and reflect upon it, I say yes to it, and somehow that brings the experience back into my heart. And my heart is the ultimate yes machine. Bring it back in, baby. Let's go. gather that in. Bring it in. It's like a mama. Just bring it in. Let's get it into the hug machine. And this hug machine is an existential hug machine. It's not a fluffy BS hug machine. It's deep. You know, it says it has to say yes to the most complicated, confounding, painful, impermanent, difficult experiences, gutsy to do that kind of work. But that's what the heart likes too, because you, if you bring it in, the heart's like, oh yeah, here we go. Yes, 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 let's go. Number four, the heart grows stronger when trampled. Did you know, and my wife is the one who taught me this. She's an herbalist, as you guys know. Chamomile, when trampled, they actually literally in certain places will plant chamomile in walking paths because when it's trampled, it emits this beautiful aroma. Not only that, but when chamomile is trampled, it actually helps it grow and proliferate and it gets stronger. So there's some plants that are like that, where if they get trampled, it actually helps them grow and spread and release beautiful smells and aromas. Now, this is a radical one because I'm not advocating that you trample on anyone else's heart or that you go looking to have your heart trampled, but in the case that your heart has been trampled, remember that the heart is like chamomile. The heart has this amazing ability when it's trampled to say yes, right? To grow stronger. I would say that there are some times when it's really hard to recover from having the heart trampled. There's trauma and there is a long, slow, winding path of recovery for many of us. So I do not mean for this to sound trite or like it is easy or like it doesn't require serious help and intervention at times. But here's what I have learned time and time again from almost 13,000 clients that I've seen in my astrology practice over 13 years. I have seen that most of the time, people who face and deal with trauma, much of which could be described as having had the heart trampled, that most of the people having done that work or in the process of still doing that work, that there is something remarkably strong and courageous about such people. And I think that a lot of people turn to astrology because astrology helps validate the karmic, fated ups and downs of life that we have to live through and that most of us appreciate knowing about and appreciate reflecting upon because we recognize I have learned, I have grown stronger. And I think it comes back to the heart having to say yes to our experiences, but it's the same idea. Consider that the most beautiful aromas that your heart has to offer the world, that you have to realize about yourself, the most beautiful qualities that you can realize about yourself, come when our heart gets trampled. Because guess what? What we end up realizing eventually, I believe it's in this lifetime or the next, that eventually we realize my heart is still okay. It's still beating. It's still affirming. It's still back there just thumping out the most beautiful yes that I've ever heard. Number five, the heart is already perfect. We realize this in proportion to our ability to accept ourselves. This is a truth that I feel like has been really helpful for me. There's nothing wrong with me. There never has been. There's nothing wrong with you. There never has been. Even the darkest people, the most, you know, our greatest enemies, and even the things that we would probably call evil, and functionally they are, you know, in the world we experience them as evil, they have a role to play, and we subjectively describe it as evil, and it is like, that is what it is on a certain level. But behind the existence of darkness itself, the ability that darkness has to exist and be a thing is sustained because there is a universal heart beating and going, yes. Yes, yes, yes. And so what I've realized is that this universe, with the inclusion of everything that in our experience can be described as ugly, dark, evil, etc., everything is also in this incredibly transcendent way that baffles me most of the time, perfect. And when I realize that, when I take that and I apply it to myself as a dad or as a husband or as a friend or as an astrologer, you know, as a employer to the people that I employ to help my programs and stuff like that, the responsibilities I have and whether I'm doing a good job of it or not, how am I performing as a dad today? You know, all these things. That there's a time where I reach this space pretty often where I just have to go, I am perfect exactly as I am. it's some cosmic Mr. Rogers happy horse shit, but it is true, you know? The more deeply I can accept myself just as I am, the more that I am able to actually feel my heart. Number six, the heart connects to entire networks of hearts through compassion, forgiveness, and empathy. Through listening. Even something as simple as that. See, the thing is that we're all like, as souls, as beings in creation, we're all sort of like satellites, little satellite hearts orbiting the great heart. And it's a mystery because it's not easy to point to where that heart is or what it looks like. But we're all a part of and orbiting this one tremendous heart. We're not meant to be living life in a vacuum. Our heart, by its very nature, needs to have the experience of being connected. So many times I hear people in my daily counseling sessions, you know, looking at birth charts, fearing that the need that they have for positive, healthy attachment, dependence, interdependence, relationship, love, reciprocation is somehow evidence of something that is wrong with them. I am not self-sufficient. I am not capable. I am not autonomous. I am not sovereign. I am not self-governing. And so all of these things that I need or want or hope for that with regard to my relationships are only there because I have yet to become capable enough and independent enough. And honestly, this is just a modern bullshit myth. That we've taken individuality to such an extreme is problematic. Now, I personally help people all the time to also disentangle themselves from, you know, being overly dependent upon substances or people or whatever. So I can readily acknowledge that people need to individuate and that individuality and self-sustaining qualities are vital, right? But not to the extent that most people think they are these days. We live in a relational reality that needs heart and soul connections. That is like water. Psychically, we are like malnourished when we live in little isolated spaces, projecting images of each other and not having real connections, for example. And I'm not going to tell you what a real connection is or isn't, but I bet you know what one feels like. So how do we connect our hearts to other people? And this Venus retrograde can be an amazing time to look at our lives and say, is this a heart and soul connection? Do I have them in my lives? Where do I need them? Where am I like thirsty for heart connection to someone else? Well, the heart connects to entire networks of other hearts through compassion, being present for the pain and suffering of other people, forgiveness, the act of forgiving people that have wronged us or that have harmed us, who are seeking forgiveness. And even if they're not seeking forgiveness, we can do the forgiving in our own hearts, and through empathy or just through listening. A Venus retrograde, no matter what sign, is always good for improving our connections to other people on a heart level. But this one, especially since it's in the sign of the sun, the heart, ruler of the heart. Number seven, the heart doesn't need the mind to justify its desires, attractions, or aversions. I'm not saying the mind and the heart can have no connection to one another. Of course they can. They can have a very positive one. But a lot of the times what I notice for myself is my heart feels a feeling. I feel myself attracted to something, maybe a little bit averse to something. I can feel my joys, my desires, my attractions, my aversions. And then my mind goes, let me just check in and make sure this is all appropriate and all okay. And it's like, you're not the boss of me. You know what I mean? You're a helpful ally. But our minds sometimes act like they are critics, judges, and overseers that are telling us whether the heart is okay or not. And I think we need to move the mind into the role of friend, conversational ally, but not judge, supervisor, and like, you know, giving stamp of approval. Cooperator, that's a better role for the mind in relation to the heart. And these are things that can become so much more obvious when Venus is retrograde in the sign of the lion, in the sign of the heart. Number eight, the heart's most life-affirming gesture is to let things go while continuing to stay open. Hurts, challenging moments, there is a way in which the most radical thing the heart can do, I mean, so much of it comes back to that, yes, yes, yes. But another way that we can say yes is to let things flow through, to just let them pass like water flowing through us. We can bring it through the heart and let it pass through. It's very purifying. And I'm not talking about things where, you know, we can't just let something go. We got to deal with it, right? I'm talking about how many times during your day would it be easier to say, oh, look at that. That's interesting. Let it pass through the big yes tributary of my heart, accept it, give it a big sunny hug somewhere, and let it keep flowing. It's one of the most amazing things that we can do. Because then we can have a good sense of humor about it. People say things that are absurd. They're doing things that are crazy. And we can be like, yeah, I've let some crazy shit pass through the river of my heart too. And we can laugh rather than being like, well, that's not allowed in my heart space. So you must be, there must be something wrong with you. When we let things flow through us and just observe and kind of appreciate, laugh a little bit, but let little things flow through rather than scrutinizing them and this is good and this is bad and judging and, you know, meticulously making our mind analyze and dissect everything, just letting things flow through, it makes us so much more lovable and likable because we become deeper empathizers while also being less judgmental. Number 9, the heart is fed by storytelling. Another thing that I hear people of like averse to, and this is sort of new age stuff. I saw this a lot in the yoga community that I was a part of. We owned a yoga studio for a long time. People are like, I got to get out of all of my stories and just stay present. It's like, okay, I get that, right? It's like on a certain level, like, okay, yes. If you're getting lost in like all of these crazy stories and you need to come to the present moment because the stories are dictating your happiness and they're just spinning you out, then okay, get out of storytelling and come to the present moment. Breathe, take a walk, get in your body. Totally appropriate advice. But sometimes it goes too far. And people think that somehow your life isn't a story. No, no, no. In fact, it is not just a story. It is like the most grand, dramatic, choose your own adventure story meets opera, meets summer blockbuster. And there's, you know, not just one storyline, but there's like 15 protagonists and 15 storylines. And our life is meant to be imagined along and lived like a dramatic play. And we should soak that up. There's nothing wrong with it. Getting lost in the beautiful storylines of our lives is for most of us enriching so long as we can have the ability to come back to the present and realize that, you know, what our heart is doing is our heart is like laying in the flowers, looking up at the clouds, plucking images out of the clouds. Like, what a great way to spend an afternoon. What's wrong with that? You're going to deny yourself the ability to imagine a life story just because it's rather subjective. There are multiple possibilities. You can get lost in them. Well, that's dangerous. Stay away from storytelling. No, no, no. Know that storytelling and imagination and fantasy and romance and adventure feed the heart and help us to ultimately tap back into the heart, because all stories lead back to the same place. The happily ever after, the painful letting go, the difficult, you know, tragedy, all of these stories lead us back to the same place, and it's the heart anyway. So what's the danger in letting our lives live out stories? Nothing. So a little advocating for stories, storytelling, and living a life that is imagined along. And if you need to, come back to the present moment, get in your body, get grounded, and check out, you know, get out of the storytelling if you need to. Let's stop hating on storytelling. And finally, number 10, the heart is more than a physical organ, but you can know it by meditating on the physical organ. If you want to know what a heart is like spiritually, place your hand on your heart, close your eyes, and feel it. That's what I've got for today. I hope that these pieces of advice, these meditations on the heart, will help you this summer as Venus goes through Leo for many months and takes a nice long retrograde through Leo. Come back to these meditations and maybe they'll help us as we are getting neck deep in some of the stories of the heart and soul, the painful ones, the life-changing ones, the ones that, you know, it feels like we're just, you know, we're so deep in the dramas of the heart. And that can very much happen when Venus is in Leo in retrograde. But if we come back to what the heart is, and that we are the heart. I think that these truths can help us have a really positive experience, one that affirms us, affirms our lives, helps us deepen our relationships, and strengthen our heart connections. All right, that's what I've got for today. I hope you guys are doing well. We'll see you again tomorrow. Bye, everyone.